So thank you for this kind introduction. Thank you for having me here. I'm very happy and pleased to be here and have the opportunity to experience this nice research place. So before I'm going to start, I'm Sebastian. I work at the University of Heidelberg, where I'm funded by this recently accepted excellence cluster, where there's a lot of money and a lot of cool research projects. Basically, they try to connect many areas in natural sciences with computer science. And it's a very, very big emerging cluster where there's much money and probably a lot of research opportunities. And so what I'm going to talk about right now. So in the last 2 or 3 years, there has been so much there have been so many publications about where machine learning was applied to figure out phase diagrams of some of the most complicated physical systems, where other methods have come to their limits. And all these results have been quite convincing, but there's one serious problem. We have not figured out any new physics with these methods. And if these methods are, if we want these methods to be successful, we want to figure out new physics. Otherwise, what's the point of doing that? The thing is, now there's a big publication bias. So everything that works was published. Everything that was not, that doesn't work, was not published. And if we apply these neural networks to physical systems, we do not really know if we can trust the results or not because of the black box nature of these algorithms. So
that is why
during this talk, I'm going to ask the questions, can we trust phase diagrams produced by artificial neural networks? And or can we even go a little bit further? So let me invite you. What is the basic setting that we're dealing with? So what many physicists are doing, we have a microscopic Hamiltonian, in this case, the Ising model, which is just a spin model that you all know. And we want to calculate phase diagrams. So on the one hand, there are physicists who make all these symmetry considerations and derive order parameters. They make these theoretical assumptions, what orders could emerge in these systems. And on the other hand, we can simulate this physical system. And in order to draw a phase diagram, you evaluate all these possible order parameters corresponding to these different phases on the Monte Carlo simulations to draw a phase diagram. So in the case of the Ising model, we can see a very known phase diagram everyone knows. In the ferromagnetic phase, the magnetization, which is the order parameter here, takes a finite value. And in the paramagnetic phase, this value is zero, while at the critical temperature, there's a very steep jump. Or a very discontinuous, not smooth transition of the order parameter. And the setting is now, while there are approaches where you can replace the Monte Carlo simulations with a neural network or enhance the Monte Carlo simulations with neural networks, we are going to take a different route. We are going to replace the observable or the order parameter by a neural network. So we want to train a neural network that replaces the observable as a predictor for the phases. And this leads me to the outline of my talk. So at first, I'm going to introduce machine learning. I'm assuming that there is, no knowledge of machine learning. If this is different, just interrupt me. If everyone knows it, then I'm going to skip that. Then I'm going to talk how we interpret neural networks in order to judge if we can trust neural networks or not. And in the end, I'm going to discuss some examples. So I'm going to introduce the interpretation method at the Ising model in two dimensions. Then I'm going to apply the interpretation method to SU2 lattice gate theory, where the interpretation method is seeing a very nice testing ground, because in SU2 lattice gate theory, the order parameter, the Polyakov loop, is non-local and non-linear. So this basically are the two problems that we are facing when we want to transition from spin models to more complicated models. And in the end, I'm going to discuss some preliminary results on the Hubbard model on the hexagonal lattice, where we see we can do the same interpretation procedure, but I'm not so sure what the neural network learns. Okay, let's start with machine learning. Here I'm going to discuss supervised machine learning. And if we Google machine learning and check Wikipedia, Wikipedia says machine learning is the field of computer science that gives computers the ability to learn without being explicitly programmed. And that means these machine learning algorithms do not encode all these properties of cats and dogs, like all these lines and hairs in some mathematical equations, and some person programs them into an algorithm, but we have this black box or blue box machine learning algorithm, which is standard, and there is nothing which is adjusted for cats and dogs, so it's pretty general. You can feed it with different data and you get different results, but the algorithm stays the same. In this case, in the case of supervised machine learning, we have a training data set, which consists of labeled images. In this case, we have a training data set of cats labeled with cats and a training data set with dogs labeled with dogs. And we train a machine learning algorithm to correctly associate the labels to these images. And if the training has been successful, then the machine learning algorithm is, after training, able to predict the correct label on these new unseen images. And in this case, it would find out that it's a dog. The most powerful machine learning algorithms since 2012 are artificial neural networks. And artificial neural networks are just a connected graph that processes input data through some hidden layers until we get an output. And all these layers consist of neurons. These neurons are connected with the previous layer and the following layer, and we have no interlayer connections. Each of these neurons is a minimal neural network, or a perceptron. A perceptron takes input values x1, x2, x3, multiplies each of these values with weights w1, 2, 3, adds a bias, puts it through some predefined nonlinear function f, and outputs some value y. So this is what happens in all of these neurons. So the y is then used as input for the next layer, and so on. And we, in this case, we denote the data
by x.
X is the whole data set, where each of these vectors x1 to xn are data points. So each of these x1 to xn could be either an image of a cat or a dog, or a physical sample. In the case of physical sample, we will later change x to s. The other quantity that we use are labels y. This is the collection of all labels of the data set, of the training set, labeled y1 to yn. So y1 corresponds to x1. And if x1 is an image of a dog, y1 would be dog, or 0 or 1 in the language of computers. And we denote the neural network as this function f. So the neural network is just a function that takes
input, gives us some output.
The neural network is then dependent on the input, and many of the weights in all of the layers and biases in all of the layers that we need to adjust so that we get an output y predicted, which is as close as possible to the true label y. And the procedure of adjusting the weights and biases such that y predicted is as close to y is called training. And how do we do the training? So we formulate a quantity that measures how well y predicted approximates y, And this is called the loss function. One of the most common loss functions is just the mean squared error, which measures the difference of the neural network output to the true label for all data points in the training set. And during training, we adjust the weights and the biases through the gradient descent algorithm, such that we minimize this mean squared error loss function. And if we have been successful, then this trained neural network will be able to give the correct prediction, even on unseen data where we did not know the labels. And the algorithm of how to do that efficiently is called the backpropagation algorithm, which is basically a version of the gradient descent algorithm, which just relies on the chain rule again and again and again. So there's nothing really special. It's just gradient descent with chain rules. One additional important part that we're going to rely on are convolutional neural networks. So convolutional neural networks are neural networks that consist of convolutional layers. And since 2012, they have become very famous because in 2012, artificial neural networks with convolutional layers have outperformed every other machine learning algorithm on tasks like image recognition. So these networks are the best performers in some image recognition contests, and they have been quite famous so far. And in these image recognition contests since 2012, not a single not convolutional neural network has won. So what are these convolutional neural networks? So they consist of convolutional layers where each of the neuron of the next layer only sees a small part of the previous layer. So we have each of these neurons at the same spatial point in the next layer sees only a very small spatial extent of the previous layer. And all of the weights of this neuron are shared by translational symmetry across the whole lattice. And these shared weights naturally lead to less parameters, way less parameters, so it becomes much easier to train. And an important feature is it preserves the spatial structure. So if something was in a previous layer at a specific location, it will be in the next layer at a specific location, which helps us a lot with physical systems where we make a lot of use of locality. Like, for example, if you have the magnetization, if you have, for example, the energy, then you would want to learn the behavior of neighboring spins, the correlation of neighboring spins. So it is advantageous to give the neural network an easier task, more help to learn features that rely on spins that are close to each other. This algorithm was applied to determine the phase diagram of the easing model by Juan and Roger almost 3 years ago, which was one of the papers that started this whole subdiscipline of machine learning and physics. And what you basically do is you produce Monte Carlo simulations as training data over the whole temperature range or in a subset of the temperature range. You label these Monte Carlo configurations with the corresponding phases. So if it's a ferromagnet, you label it by 0. If it's a paramagnet, you label it by 1. At points of the temperature range where you know, where you are absolutely certain that you're in one phase. And in the region of the phase diagram where you're not so sure what phase you are in, you're then applying the neural network after having successfully trained to the Monte Carlo configurations in the test region. And to a very high degree of accuracy, it can predict the correct phase. And you can narrow it down to find the phase transition. And this phase transition can be found to a basically arbitrary, to an arbitrary accuracy, and which is the 1% deviation of the exact value that was derived by Onsaga a few years back. And the results of such a calculation can be seen in this diagram. So we have a plot where we plot the classification probability of the neural network versus the temperature, and we see that at the critical temperature that was predicted, the exact TC, the neural network shows a steep jump to give us the correct. Now that we have set up what we do with machine learning of phase diagrams, there has been the development of many other algorithms, which have all different advantages, and there have even been more improvements to these algorithms. So I've just listed the most basic algorithms. There have been much more powerful improvements to these that I'm not going to list. Let us discuss what the advantages of all these are and why I'm going to address specifically artificial feedforward neural networks. So what we just discussed was the machine learning algorithm called feedforward neural network. These algorithms are the most powerful machine learning algorithm that we use. These convolutional layers give us the advantage of preserving the spatial structure. The drawback is just of all the machine learning algorithms that I've listed here, this is the least interpretable. Another machine learning algorithm that was introduced to calculate phase diagram was also done here, which was done by Pedro. I think he's not here anymore. Yeah, together with Roger. So support vector machines can be interpreted very easily to a very high degree. The problem is just these support vector machines do not scale for on large data sets. So this drawback makes them suitable for small tasks, but the most complicated physical systems will probably not be solved by support vector machines. Then another neural network that was introduced was a recurrent neural network.
Why?
For dynamical systems, all of these algorithms up to the middle are supervised learning schemes. There are other learning algorithms which are unsupervised learning algorithms, which can be used to infer if a system exhibits a phase transition or not, if we're a priori not sure if there is a phase transition. So in the case of the easing model, we already assumed that there is a phase transition to do supervised learning. These unsupervised methods do not rely on this previous knowledge. So at first, there is the principal component analysis, which is the most easy to use. It's just a linear mapping to the eigenvectors of the covariance matrix of the data. And so the drawback is this is a linear supervised, unsupervised learning algorithm, but it has a very high degree of interpretability. Another version based on neural networks is the autoencoder, which can be interpreted more easily than the feedforward neural network, and has also the advantage that you can support it with convolutional layers to resolve the spatial structure, which was years back. And a hybrid variant of these algorithms is learning phase transitions by confusion, which was done by Ebert and his friends. So he applied a supervised feedforward neural network. He confused it such that you can, without assuming that there is a phase transition, find phase transition. That is why I classified it as a hybrid algorithm. Okay, so now we're at the point where we can already discuss how we are going to transition to systems where we do not know what is happening. If we, so far we have applied machine learning to systems where we know what happens and we can reproduce all the results to a very high degree, but So far, machine learning algorithms have not found any fundamentally new physics for any unknown systems. So what are the problems that keep us restricted in going forward? So let's take, for example, the XMI model in two dimensions that I took because some people here worked on that. So Matt and Anna, I worked on that. And the XMI model in two dimensions is a spin model. And the Mermin-Wagner theorem prevents this model of having a conventional phase transition, but it is still possible to observe a phase transition, which is the unbinding phase transition of topological vortices. And if you do the normal approach of finding a phase transition that I just discussed, you will find that you get the wrong results. So the direct application of this neural network yields the wrong phase boundary. And why is that? Because it learns not the quantity that we humans use in order to distinguish between phases. So if you want to obtain the correct phase boundary, you need to do a significant feature engineering, so calculating some vorticity to feed the neural network instead of the raw Monte Carlo configurations, and then this neural network becomes able to predict the correct phase boundary. But what now if this system would be completely unknown, and neural networks would be the method that would make the first prediction on the system? If we do not know what is going on, there is a very high chance we make mistakes. If we publish a paper and we do not know what's going on, it could be a completely wrong prediction. So this least interpretable is a serious problem that prevents us from going forward. But still, I bet artificial neural networks are
still the way to go, since
they are the most powerful. And my bet would be, if we would make a new prediction for new physics, it will be based on feedforward artificial neural networks. Okay, so if we want to solve the problem of not being able to resolve what the neural network does, we need to interpret it. We need to interpret this black box algorithm and find out what is happening there. So many methods of interpreting a neural network are, for example, you look at the weights and you draw pictures and you look at them and then you see some features occurring. Sometimes it works, but in my experience, I could not do a lot in the case of physical systems. Another method would be the dreaming procedure, where you propagate back changes in the loss function to your input while keeping all the weights of the neural network fixed. And then you can draw a very nice input picture, but I would also not know how to infer new physical quantities from this changed input picture. So let's break it down. How can we make a very precise definition of interpretability? So we want to make a definition that says if the neural network learns a certain quantity, then the neural network looks like this. So if the neural network bases its decision only on one single quantity or observable, Q of S, then we assume that the larger the observable evaluated on the lattice configurations S, then the higher must be, or the lower, the classification probability. And the other assumption is, if two inputs S have the same value of this observable, they must have the same classification probability. Very straightforward. And this lets us make the definition. The neural network can be mapped via a bijective function to the observable. So in this case, we say the neural network bases its decision on the quantity Q of S. Now we have the problem, okay, neural networks normally base their decision on more than just one quantity. Is this feasible? Can we derive some procedure how to retrieve this quantity S from the neural network? And yes, it is possible. So at first, the first step is, okay, how can we ensure that the neural network learns only one quantity? Okay, that is, it might seem bad because we drop all the many of the other quantities, but in the end, we will still get the most dominant quantity that the neural network bases its decision on, which is not optimal, but it's the best that we can get in this scenario. And we have done this using this very complicated looking neural network, which consists of several subnetworks, where sample configuration is put in through all of these networks, and they produce different outputs. And the procedure is now we start using this network. This basically is the most general neural network that we just used, that Roger used, that Juan used when they made their first paper. We ensure that this neural network has convolutional layers at the beginning. And what we now do, we prune the neural network, we cut the connections, we restrict some locality of features. So we reduce the capacity of the neural network step by step, which is depicted by going from here to here to here to here. So if we go from here to here, this neural network cannot learn any function anymore that relies on correlations between these two layers, between these two spatial structures. And if we do that a lot of times and we do not observe a drop in performance, then we can safely assume that the neural network has not dropped any important quantity and is still keeping the quantity that it is basing its decision on. And by looking at the structure of the neural network, we can infer a lot of the symmetries and properties of this quantity Q, up to a point where we can, in some cases, write down the explicit expression of this quantity Q. So the interpretation net interpolates between the most general neural network and the minimal neural network, which has still the same performance. The interpretation by reducing the neural network capacity in an ordered manner until one observes a performance drop. And if we have observed this performance drop, we know we have cut one connection or restricted the neural network too far. So we have lost this quantity that the neural network has previously based its decision on. And the structure of these networks is inspired by extensive physical quantities. So many quantities like the energy, order parameters in many physical systems are completely extensive, except in our case, the order parameter of the SU2 gauge theory, which is one reason why we use that later as an example. What is interesting to know here, a very similar procedure was introduced by Isaac Tamblyn in Ottawa to derive his extensive neural network to be able to make more accurate predictions of some observables in large lattices.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you have to assume that the training procedure converges all the time, like in all the steps?
So I'm going to talk more about it, but yes. So what you basically do, you train one neural network, the training converges, and then you reduce the capacity. The training you start again with the reduced capacity neural network. You train it also fully until the end. If it converges to the exact same value of the loss function, then you assume the neural network has not lost any important features, so it has learned the same quantity.
I guess the question.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Is if it doesn't converge, does it mean that you throw away the important information, or does it mean also that maybe just the training didn't work?
So. So we can start the question at if you do not have the interpretation procedure, but you just apply a neural network to predict phase transitions, like what you did in your first paper, then it can sometimes be that it does converge and sometimes it does not converge. And our assumption here is already that in this case, our training procedure has converged. So this is a problem that occurs even before the interpretation procedure. And now if we start the interpretation procedure, we observe if the reduced capacity neural network converges to the same value of the loss function. And if it's the same or approximately the same, then we think we have not lost any important details. If it drops, then we assume, okay, we have cut the capacity of the neural network too far, and we have lost one important detail about the quantity that we learn on the Monte Carlo samples. So let's start to apply this interpretation procedure to the two-dimensional easing model. So we start with your neural network. We train a convolutional neural network until it is converged. We remember the loss value, as we just discussed. And then we reinitialize the neural network with reduced receptive field sizes. So the receptive field sizes can be seen here. What that means is before averaging over the whole spatial structure, we let the neural network learn correlations on everything in the receptive field size, in the receptive field. So if the receptive field is the full lattice, as what is usually done, then you can learn all possible correlations. If you reduce the capacity of the neural network to be able to just resolve, to just learn correlations between neighboring spins, and you're not able to learn these anymore, then you have restricted your receptive field size, and we will later be able to make a very accurate prediction of what the quantity is the neural network bases its decision on. So we start training a neural network with the full receptive field size, and then we lower the capacity of the neural network more and more until we observe a performance drop. So we see until we come to the point that until we come to a receptive field size of 1 times 2, the neural network still converges to the same value of the loss function. So that leads us to assume the neural network has not lost any important details about the quantity we want to learn on the Monte Carlo configurations. But if we reduce the receptive field sizes from 1 times 2 to just one single spin, then we observe the neural network has lost some little bit of information. So the training loss increases. So we want to minimize the training loss during the training. So higher training loss is bad. It increases. So we have lost some quantity that was important for the neural network to make its decision. And we can also see that if we compare it to the baseline, so if we do not have any information and just make random predictions, this training loss would be 0.7. So between the spin self correlations and the baseline, there is also a lot of information to be lost. So we can thus conclude that the two quantities that the neural network learns are nearest neighbor correlations and spin self correlations with some averaging procedure. Okay, you can now just already guess what these quantities are, but we can go one step further and make this this more explicit. So in the case of the first network, which has a receptive field size of 1 times 1 in the convolutional, for all the convolutional neurons, we can write the full neural network, the restricted neural network, as a simple function of the input. So the neural network as a function of the input is just an average, so this is the averaging layer, over all possible functions of spin self correlations. So if we Taylor expand this function, we know that spins squared give spins that are minus 1 and 1, squared always give 1, so we can drop all the higher order terms. So the Taylor expansion of this function only contains two terms. If we observe the constant value f0 by the bias of the neural networks and the this slope of the linear term by the weights, we can perform a regression and we find that the neural network learns exactly magnetization in the vicinity of the decision boundary. So the decision boundary is just the region where the neural network is the most unsure. So we have explicitly constructed the quantity by which the neural network learns to distinguish between the phases, and this quantity, in the case of the 1 times 1 receptive field network, is the magnetization. In the case of the 1 times 2 receptive field network, we can do the same. So we express the full neural network as a function of all the input configurations in all possible way that are possible. We have restricted us to only being able to learn spin correlations of neighboring spins in one direction. So we have lost half of the nearest neighbor connections already. And the Taylor expansion yields only a few important terms. There is only one term that could not have been learned by the previous network. So there's a constant term. This is already the a magnetization term. This is another magnetization term. These terms can be reduced to the constant term by s squared equals 1. So the only term in addition is this term. So f1 comma 1 times si sj. And if we now perform a regression on the neural network output, we find the explicit form of the neural network, which can be written as the sigmoid of weights and biases, where we observe these terms, times the energy of the easing configurations. The thing is here now, just we did not find the energy, but we just found half the energy, because during our interpretation procedure we found that dropping half of the spin connection still leads to the same physical result. So we did not really find the energy, but now our physical intuition tells us if we just rotate these samples by 90 degrees and do the same thing again, we would find the other connections, which in the end turns out to give us the energy. So we can conclude that the neural network learns as dominant quantities, in order to distinguish between phases, either the magnetization or the energy per spin side, or both. So that is exactly what we humans do. So the magnetization is the auto parameter, like in Landau theory. The energy per spin side has the heat capacity as a first derivative, which is what we humans use to classify phases via Ehrenfest classifications. So in order to summarize, we have found the magnetization, we have found the energy, and we can confirm this correlation easily by plotting what the neural network has learned with the function that we just wrote down here, so either the energy or the magnetization, and this is we see a perfect correlation. This is a correlation that you normally don't find. These are 60,000 data points. So there is no doubt that the neural network has learned these quantities. There is just one slight hint. Many approaches do not find the energy. And this is because the 1 times 2 neural network can also find the magnetization. It has also the capacity to find the magnetization. If the neural network is only able to find one quantity, not both, then it can happen that in the case of the 1 times 2 neural network, a more suitable minimum that the gradient descent algorithm drops us in is still the magnetization. So you might not see the energy in all cases. Additional note is one of my students has done the same calculation, and he has found that his neural network could not learn the magnetization at all, but only learns the energy per spin side. And I think it depends on how you do your Monte Carlo simulations. So if you're not careful enough with what you do with your Monte Carlo simulations, if they are not perfectly thermalized, if there is some residual noise things, then you just won't see the quantity that you want to learn. For example, what is here to note, if you are not experienced in Monte Carlo simulations and you calculate the magnetization of these of low temperature samples, you could find that they do not become one, but some value below one, just because you could not thermalize properly. So the next theory that we're going to look at is SU2 lattice gauge theory. So don't worry if that looks unknown or too complicated. So this theory is just the sum of all the smallest loops on a lattice, where all of these loops consist of link matrices in SU2. And each of these link matrices allow us to go from one lattice side to another lattice side. And these loops just are just the smallest possible loops on the lattice sides. Each of these SU2 matrices are parameterized in terms of four real numbers, which we use as an input for the neural network after we've performed the Monte Carlo simulations. This model, I like to see this model as a toy model for confinement in QCD that has a very interesting order parameter. This is the Polyakov loop order parameter in the limit of infinitely heavy quarks. And the reason why we look at this, it is a perfect testing ground for our method, since the Polyakov loop order parameter is nonlinear and non-local. And just note, I do not write down the Polyakov loop order parameter right now. This is, you will see later why. At first, we assume, okay, we do not know in this system that there is a phase transition. So we take all these Monte Carlo configurations and we perform unsupervised learning that I did not explain. So in this case, principal component analysis. We see that principal component analysis shows us a drop in the reconstruction loss and a rise in the average norm of the principal components. But this principal component analysis does not base its decision on the Polyakov loop, which we can see in this correlation plot, so the worst correlation ever. But this is also clear because principal component analysis is a linear unsupervised learning algorithm, so it cannot learn any nonlinear function. But the step helps us to identify regions where we are absolutely sure that we are in one phase, which we can then use in the next step for the supervised learning step to train our neural network on. So we train the neural network in these regions. We test the neural network in regions in between where we are unsure about the phases. And we find that the neural network shows a very steep change in the classification probability, which is very close to the results from the lattice calculations. Here we also find that these do not align because of some drawbacks of the Monte Carlo simulations. This is not a drawback of the neural network. And now we are going to apply the same interpretation procedure that we applied previously to the easing model. So we write down, so we start with a neural network that has the capacity to learn all possible correlations on the lattice configurations, which is which can be seen here, which is the 2 × 8 × 8 × 8 recitative field size neural network. And we find it converges quite nicely. Now we reduce the receptive field size I have omitted all the steps in between. And we see that if we reduce the receptive field size of the neural network to this point where we have 2 times 1 times 1 times 1 receptive field size, 2 is the extent in the time direction, then we still achieve a similar training loss as before. So it is even smaller, but we consider that as roughly the same quantity. It's both close to zero. So we now assume we have not lost anything important by reducing our neural network capacity in these steps. If we reduce the neural network capacity even further, so if we drop all time-like correlations, then we see that our neural network cannot converge to a loss which is better than the baseline. So the neural network can then not decide between phases better than just a random classifier. So we know that the most dominant structure that the neural network learns has this, learns this kind of spatial correlations. So an extent in the time direction, but a local in all spatial dimensions. So we can express, again, the whole neural network as a function that contains all possible correlations in the time-like directions. We can then perform a regression on the neural network output, and we find that in an ordered manner of 561 terms, that there are only 4 leading terms. We assume that all these terms in the middle are just approximation errors, and that's why we formulate this function as the Polyakov loop, which is basically just a trace of the matrix product of 2 link matrices in time direction. And this is the Polyakov loop. So now we see, why did I not tell you about the Polyakov loop before? Because in this scenario, we have derived the Polyakov loop order parameter without prior knowledge. So if we would not have known the Polyakov loop order parameter before, we would now know it. So we cannot, in some cases, we can go even further than just interpreting neural networks by quantities that we already know. So if we are lucky and we find a system like this, we can construct the order parameter just by looking at the neural network. And the deduction is then again confirmed by plotting these correlation plots, like confirming that there could be a one-to-one mapping between the quantity and the output of the neural network. And we see there's a perfect correlation between Polyakov loop and neural network output. So now there's one system that we're looking at, right? Yeah?
So you use the lattice of 2 times 8 times 8 times 8.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I use the lattice of n times 8 times 8 times 8.
Then the neural network has a lot harder task to learn the phase transition.
So your receptive field should be of the order of n.
Yes.
Time,
yeah.
To learn the polyakov.
Yeah. So the interpretation procedure works the same, but the first step probably won't work as good anymore. So if you, I think, go beyond 4 sites, 3 to 4 sites in a time-like direction, the neural network should not be able to learn the phase transition from raw data. So this is not a problem of the interpretation procedure, but this is a problem of neural networks in general. So the last system that we're considering is the Hubbard model, which will turn out to be our negative example. So we put the Hubbard model on a hexagonal lattice, which you can see here, which has a unit cell of 2 sites. The Hubbard model just consists of the creation and annihilation operators of the fermions. So this is the hopping term that allows electrons to hop from one side to the other side. The other term describes the Coulomb repulsion between electrons which sit on the same side. So the configuration is penalized if there are 2 electrons on the same side. In order to perform a Monte Carlo simulation, we introduce complex Arbert Stratonovich fields, phi 1, phi 1 star, phi 2 star, on in each unit cell. We produce bosonic field configurations on a lattice of 12 times 12 times 256, so 256 in time-like direction, 12 times 12 in the spatial direction, and we examine the transition between a semi-metal and a spin density wave with the neural network, like we've done it before in all of these the other systems. And we find that there is a phase transition at roughly U equals 10.3. However, this phase diagram looks a bit different, so we cannot get it to converge to a very steep change of the classification probability. So the curve is relatively flat, and gives us an inaccurate phase boundary. And we also see that if we initialize the weights of the neural networks differently, we can observe a small change in the value of the phase boundary. So this already raises some concerns, because in most other systems I looked at, the phase boundary was much more clearer and it always converged to the same value. We can now do the same interpretation procedure as before, and we find that the neural network finds a quantity which just relies on a local combination of these bosonic auxiliary fields, which is normally not what you take as an observable in these systems. So as an observable, you calculate the fermionic propagator, and your observables can be calculated from that. And this combination of bosonic fields seems to me like something unphysical, and in this case I would assume right now that the neural network has learned something wrong. So if this would be an unknown system and we would publish a paper, this would most likely be a wrong result. So it is still not clear what is going to happen, but in this case the neural network loses its predictive power. So to conclude my talk, neural networks are capable of producing phase diagrams for many really complicated physical systems. And in order to trust them, in order to give them predictive power, we need to understand what they do. And we have found that in the context of order parameter-based phase transitions, like we discussed before, there is now a procedure how we can judge if we can trust these phase transitions. And we find that in all of these cases, the neural network learns the quantities that we humans derive to distinguish between phases, like the order parameters by Landau, or the energy derivatives of the energy by Ehrenfest. And in some cases, we can even determine the explicit expressions of the order parameter or the nature of the phases by constructively interpreting what these neural networks learn. So, thanks a lot. Yeah. Or you decide, right? Your chair.
Right. So, in the case of the SU2 lattice gauge theory,
yeah,
your network doesn't know about the SU2 gauge symmetry, right?
No.
So the order parameters that may propose are not guaranteed to be gauge invariant.
Yeah, a priori not. Yeah.
Do you think there may be a way to, at the level of the network architecture, have networks know about gauge symmetry and propose?
So there is this paper by learning action per I don't know it. So does anyone know it? Like the talk at the KITP by. Yeah, so there is a way. Someone already did that. They have a much larger lattice, and they could not process raw configurations anymore. So they did the most basic feature engineering already incorporated in their neural network, which is basically they calculated a small subset of all possible gauge invariant quantities before and used that as an input layer of the neural network, or as one of the first layers of the neural network. So, and then you ensure you have gauge invariants.
Yeah.
What?
Right?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Supervisor.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Why do you ask that? Tell me. Yeah.
I'm working on some other thing, but I don't feel it's working.
Yeah. Then you better ask her. She did that. Yeah. Yeah.
So you mentioned pro and cons or positive negative aspects when you apply neural network to a physical system. I think the problem would be more severe when you try to apply it to more complex systems, such as string classes. So I'm wondering if you can tell any potential problem that we will encounter
when you apply neural network to a springless problem? I don't know. I'm just thinking of work that was done, but I don't know. I think there is one work using the autoencoder where they calculate the entropy of such a system. I have not tried it, and I have not enough experience about phase transitions in spin glasses, so I do not really know.
Question. So very nice talk. I'm not from physics. I'm from computer science. The way I understand what you're doing here is you start with a neural network trained on this data that you have. Can you minimize it in some way, which is what you refer to as interpretable?
You know, you prune the neural network in some sense, and you train it again.
You convert it in a symbolic form, right? Like an equation, you're able to see it.
So I'm not converting it as a symbolic form. I'm just using the knowledge of my. So I know what I pruned, and then I just express my quantity that. All the quantities that has been learned by could be learned by the neural network as all functions that only have the probability the properties that have not been restricted. So there's no symbolic calculations in this. But I think I understood your question a bit wrong.
You do look in the third example that you gave. The debugger in this case was the human.
Yeah.
And my point is that if you were able to convert it into a symbolic form, you could build a debugger that's not necessarily human, but a machine, an automated system that could take as input the symbolic form, cross-verify it with other auxiliary information. So what you did is you said these bosonic parameters should not appear. I just know this because of my understanding of previous systems. So you did a cross-verification.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you did.
Yeah.
So if you do this, if you automate this process to some extent, I think you could go much further than where you are. We can talk about this afterwards.
Yeah, we can talk about this afterwards.
Convert this into a symbolic expression and then automate that.
Yeah.
This could be a very
good direction. Yeah. Do you think in the direction of evolutionary computing algorithms?
Not necessarily.
No?
I'm thinking symbolic tools that essentially like mathematical algorithms that can take as input equations and interpret them or solve them.
Yeah.
So solvers, but you could go much further.
Yeah.
If you were to combine the two.
So what you're saying, proposing is basically then to replace the regression step by your step.
Replace the human.
Replace the human.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
It's possible in some cases.
Other questions?
You know, in the Hubbard model, has anybody applied neural networks to identify a superconducting transition?
So Simon Trebst and Roger and did that in the what is it called? Circumventing the sign problem using machine learning or something like that. They applied it to the same model, but they did not use raw Monte Carlo data, but they used propagators as an input. So.
Use the auxiliary fields directly here.
Yeah.
So I have a question regarding to that. So when we try to make a theory about the interpretability of neural network, what about the structure of the data that we give to the neural network? Because you can say, yeah, the neural network does not give the correct result, but how does it depend on the input data?
How does it?
Depend on the input data.
So in what? In what sense? You mean on the structure of the input data?
Yeah.
So.
Like whether you give spin configurations, whether you give green functions, I mean, like in the XY model that we showed, sometimes you give wrong results.
Yeah.
When you do some education, it gives correct results.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we cannot maybe blame the neural network that you are doing bad.
No, the neural network does exactly what it should do. That so, it's just we do not ask the neural network the correct questions to find exactly what we humans expect. So the neural network is just an optimization algorithm. So we just optimized the neural network such that it finds a very low value of the loss function. So the neural network does everything that it should. So it is basically us. We need to either find suitable variants of the input data, which should be somehow generally applicable to various different systems. So if you do that for each single system, then you basically lose the point of using the neural network, because you've already put in the most important part of the work by determining what are the most important features of this phase transition.
And the other way would then be,
could you optimize your neural network after interpreting that it does not do what you want, in such a manner that you force it to learn the true results? For example, in the XY model, could you penalize the neural network to not learn the magnetization? Then it could be that the next subleading quantity would be the vorticity, and then it could automatically learn like the vortex, anti-vortex, unbinding transition, without looking at the magnetization. So this could be a way if this is feasible.
I think that's what they do in fairness, like in machine learning, when you want these algorithms not to rely on, say, like zip code or race and so on. So they just remove whatever feature you don't want, right? Like to make the algorithm fair. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's a bit hard. So how would you remove the magnetization of the equation? So if you just like you could pick samples that have all the magnetization of zero, then you introduce a bias that you have much more samples in one phase than in the other phase. You could rescale all of these samples so that all of these samples have a magnetization of zero. I don't know yet what is optimal.
Last question.
Yeah, so constructing the data, how much of it relies on you knowing the actual answer for the physical system?
Yeah, that is the thing. So in the optimal case, if we want to achieve true predictive power, we should not rely on any big assumptions before. So on small assumptions, but not on the fundamentals of the physics that is characteristic for the phases. This should be the task of the neural network. So if we put in too much, then there is nothing left for a neural network to learn. So I'm on the, I think there are different philosophies. So what I want the neural network to figure out the most is the most relevant input features, so that you do not need to do a lot of feature engineering beforehand.
All right, let's thank Sebastian.